Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
Stephanie Swantek is here of the Be Safe Project out of Bridges Healthcare in Milford. And I have to be honest, Steph, this topic really speaks to my heart. I know that my listeners know. My husband and I, we have wanted a second child on and off for about a year and a half now, and we've been unsuccessful. But you know what? Our story is actually very common with many other people, whether it's their first child or they're trying again for another. It just seems like fertility is hard. It's much harder than it used to be years ago. Is that true or am I crazy?
No, that is scientifically research-based, accurate, yet very accurate. And I guess so the two things that I've been looking at, and again, in my background, right, sexual reproductive health, mental health, licensed social worker, et cetera, is specifically even in men, fertility has dropped 52.4%. Over the past 40 years, starting since the 1970s. So has dropped, again, over 50% in men. And then with women, again, women have taken on this whole other role of, we are not only like mothers and family members, et cetera, but then we're leaders. We work. We're outside of the home. We travel. We take on so many education, right? We have access to so much more now than maybe our grandparents or great grandparents ever did.
So those are the biggest factors as to why fertility seems to have dropped I would assume, yes, I would think society wise, women are a totally different role than they were even 40, 50 years ago. But I didn't realize that. Any idea why men's fertility has dropped so much?
Yeah. So again, so since the 1970s, it's all about environmental factors. So increase in stress, right? So that's workload, that's constantly changing things, that's chemicals in the food we eat, and even chemicals such as like BPA, which is found in like the plastics. A lot of our food is found in, and then the food absorbs that, and then we consume it. Stress, smoking, drinking. So these are all kind of environmental factors, in addition to pollution and different gases and toxins like in the air. And then again, women and high stress rates, and again, and additional responsibilities and higher expectations all around.
Wow. We're talking to Stephanie Swantek. She is with the Be Safe Project out of Bridges Healthcare in Milford. And, you know, we're talking about infertility because, you know, maybe for a lot of our listeners right now, Steph, you know, my demographic is mostly 50 and up. But what I find interesting is a lot of my listeners have kids and they have grandchildren. And at some point, you all would love to be grandparents or great grandparents. And I think
yes.
That's a beautiful thing. But man, we're struggling. It's hard to do that.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's hard to do that. Like, you know, I look at, for example, a 30-year difference. When my mom got pregnant with me, now I'm one of five kids. God, there was like no prep. I mean, like it was just like, I want to have a baby. So that's what happened.
Right.
And now it's like, we've got to track. We've got to get on meds. We got to do prenatal. We've got like, it's alarming what our generation has to do to procreate. It's crazy.
And also too, Melissa, I'm not sure. I just found this out again, because I'm on my own journey of this, is also my doctor reiterated to me that only, even within the two most quote unquote fertile people, that they only have at this moment in time, this generation have a 20% chance of successfully conception at any given time. So it's only 20% chance right now. I don't know where that was prior, but when you only have a 20% chance, it's really not that high anyway. But we set these expectations, and then again, if anything about media and our families and then putting additional pressures on us and asking questions when we were unaware of what the issue could, quote-unquote, be.
And you know, Stephanie, you kind of touched on something. I know you talk to middle school, high school kids about this, and certainly in your classes and things like that. But, you know, you talk about mental health as well. And look, I this is so not calling anybody out. I don't think anyone is saying it maliciously. I know people love, and I keep using myself for an example so nobody feels uncomfortable. But, you know, I know people love our marriage. They love our son. And I've been asked, I can't tell you how many times times I have been asked just in the last year. Chase turned two. When are we going for a second? When are we going for the girl? When are we doing this? And I want to scream and say, you don't think I'm trying, or you don't think we tried? Like, mentally, my husband and I have kind of put the brakes on because we've literally told ourselves, like, this isn't healthy for us to feel like we're failing constantly. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So could you speak to maybe like the pressures of society expecting us to be like the women from 40, 50 years ago who popped out 3, 4, 5 kids when it may not even be in our wheelhouse right now?
So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, so priorities have changed. Access has changed. Again, expectations and the things that we're doing on a daily basis have changed. And so does our stress levels. And so the expectations that people put on us, that is only increasing our stress levels. And then even like, quote unquote, as females who, you know, bear the children, the whole idea that we feel like we can or cannot get pregnant or can't get pregnant again, you know, it increases our stress or anxiety in regards to our own bodies and the relationship we have with our bodies and or our partners. Because realistically, if you even look at statistics, we have a fertile, quote unquote, 5 to 7 days, but we're only ovulating when that egg is even released for 24 hours. So out of 1 month, you have your highest chances are a 24-hour period of time. And so females also, we need to, If our fertility, if we're really trying to aggressively get pregnant or get pregnant again, we have to constantly be monitoring when we're ovulating. And so we need to have access to a bathroom constantly throughout our workday. If we're a parent, then we need to, again, get on and actually try to produce the child, or get to, if we're getting inseminated and all these other pieces, getting into the doctor. So there's just so many layers of pressure on top of the family pressures of why isn't my body producing? Why isn't it creating? And then if friends or family are also comparing their experiences to yours, it only silences you and makes you feel more ashamed. And we shouldn't feel that way. We should be supporting each other. And then also being honest about our experiences, even with miscarriages. That's a whole other topic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very true. And I will say, I do feel like this generation is much more open about things like miscarriage or struggles with pregnancy. I mean, even now, you know, it's interesting. I'll have conversations and my mom's like, you're so brave to get on the air and talk about these things. And I'm like, no, it's pretty normal, Mom. And I feel like if people don't talk about it, we're never going to get anywhere. We're never going to know. We can't fix or bring light to things if we don't talk about it. And Steph, I know for some people that is really hard to do. So if anyone wants to reach out to you, they want to talk to you maybe about this and maybe even talk to their kids about it a little bit more, how can they contact you?
Absolutely. So they can email me, sswantech@bridgesmilford.org, or call. And I guess just my like last advice for anyone, even if they were younger or they're single or whatever they're thinking about, whatever their family plan is, whatever their idea of a family is, like, so birth control, right, condoms, all those things and prevention of, but also if you're thinking of, I may want to have kids in the future, whatever age you are, there's no, and again, this can be prior to a partner. There's nothing that should be holding you back of just maybe like going to get test results done of can my body handle this? Like, do I have those right numbers so that you can also set yourself up for success and whatever your family or whatever your lives will look like. So you feel a little more empowered and in control of those conversations and what to expect in the future.
Mm-hmm. Stephanie Swantech, such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much. And we'll talk again in a couple of weeks.
Thank you so much. You as well.
And now, a few minutes with U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal on WICC 600.
Senator Blumenthal, I know you were there witnessing everything go down when the president addressed Congress for the first time yesterday. First of all, your initial thoughts on the president's address?
I thought it was very forceful, disciplined, and determined, very clear-eyed. I was moved by the sense of history in the chamber. He reaffirmed that democracy works after the abhorrent attack by the rioters just about 4 months ago and the hardship and heartbreak of this past year. You know, I was struck especially by his line that we all know life knocks us down, but we all know America gets back up. I'm not quoting him directly, but that kind of determination, hope, ambition for the future, I think, is very important.
And I kind of addressed the fact that this was a pretty historic speech, the fact that he stood in front of, for the first time in our history, two leading women. He had the vice president and the speaker of the House, first time ever that we've seen something like that. And it was also the first time that it was that kind of empty. I don't want to say empty, but there was significantly less people. You know, usually when the president is addressing Congress like this, it's packed. I mean, you've got media, you've got so many people who are in there, and it was kind of a little more intimate yesterday. So I definitely noticed that as well. It was very different. I'm curious though, Senator, you know, most of the speech was obviously about the American Rescue Plan for good reason, but it felt like near the end, it was almost like a lecture, a push to have Congress act more. And I'm just curious what your thoughts are on this. Here in Connecticut, we got the police reform bill created and passed, I would say, in a matter of 6 to 8 weeks. I might be off by like a week or two, but it was very quick. And now the president is saying, look, on a national level, we need to have this passed by the 1 year anniversary of George Floyd's passing. Do you feel like we're kind of cutting corners to get to that milestone just to say, hey, we did this for George Floyd? Or do you feel like this has been discussed enough to really pass it as is?
First, you're absolutely right, Melissa, that we should be proud that Connecticut has tackled this problem. There may be some revisions in Connecticut's law necessary, and the General Assembly no doubt will address them. I hope that Congress acts with the same kind of vigor and determination. I don't think it's because of a certain deadline, but rather that we need to address the problems of injustice in our policing system and in other parts of our society. And yesterday I had a hearing in the subcommittee that I chair, the subcommittee on the Constitution of the Judiciary Committee, on red flag or emergency risk order statutes designed to prevent gun violence. And Connecticut's law was cited as one of the best in the country. So there's another problem where Connecticut is ahead of the curve and where Congress must act, and the president specifically cited the need for action. So I'm glad that he's focusing on action and demanding that Congress do better. I think the American people deserve more from Congress, not because of deadlines or artificial timelines, but because we have problems to solve. And it was a really moving moment, I can tell you, when the president turned behind him and he said, Madam Vice President. And, you know, you've had a real sense of history. You also write about the intimacy in the chamber because the COVID rules require that half the seats be empty. But, you know, there was still a lot of energy and excitement. And so I think overall, the president set a very ambitious but important agenda.
Talking to Senator Blumenthal this morning. Now, Senator Blumenthal, one of the big things, obviously, that the president touched on yesterday, he talked about expanding tax credits for children and families. He talked about lowering, tax increases for people who make more than $400,000 a year and really protecting the middle class and lower class. He talked about certainly child care, health care seem to be some of the biggest things. I'm curious, though, you know, I know we continue to put money into the southern border. We know this is obviously a very controversial situation with illegal immigrants. But I'm curious, you know, do you think we invest enough in, for example, here in America, we've got a real issue with giving jobs to veterans and finding homes for veterans and being able to support those who are from here and defend our country. And we don't have the resources for them, but we continue to kind of focus on the border. What are your thoughts on that?
Here's my takeaway from the president's speech. Most important element in it was jobs. What did he say about jobs? He said, jobs, jobs, jobs. Everything comes back to jobs, providing more jobs for the American people. He's had more than a million jobs that have been created this year. The growth rate in the country annually of 6% that will put more Americans back to work. The need to conquer the pandemic so that we can, yes, create more jobs. So whether it's veterans or anyone else, and obviously on the Veterans Affairs Committee, I have a strong interest in job training, skill training for veterans, because the jobs to be created will require those skills. And the president also included in his package an education focus. I think it all comes down to job creation so that we put America back to work. And immigration reform is necessary, including security at the border. It's always been part of my immigration reform proposals that we have stronger security at the border and that we enable business to take advantage of skills that immigrants have. You know, they are pounding at my door, businesses in Connecticut, because they need immigrants who have skills that are necessary for their business right now. And so I think it's a combined effort, but the focus on jobs is absolutely right.
So you think with the focus on jobs, you do think veterans are being made a priority?
Veterans are definitely a priority for this administration. I've spoken to the president and I've spoken to his veterans secretary about the need for more job training, more skills, and particularly among younger veterans who are just now leaving active duty. Many are in the reserves, but many have left the reserves as well. We need to reach out to them and enable them to find not just jobs, but good jobs with good benefits and good career possibilities. That's a real challenge, and it's definitely a priority for me, and I think the administration too.
Senator Blumenthal, thank you for your time this morning. We'll talk again next week.
Great to talk. Thanks, Melissa.
Let's get wild. It's the Zoom Minute with Greg Dancho from Connecticut's Beardsley Zoo on Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
Well, Greg Dancho, you know, I was really proud to go to Champlain College in Vermont, but I'm kind of thinking because of my obsession with the zoo, I probably should have gone to Fairfield University. This is such a cool option. I had no idea that Fairfield U students had the option to get into the Behavioral Observation Program. First of all, what is that, Greg Dancho?
Well, the program that we've been working with Fairfield University with Dr. Ashley Beyond, we've been doing it for, this will be our ninth year this year working
wow.
with them. And it really started out with the zoo kind of, you know, again, we talk about this before, four reasons for being a zoo are conservation, education, guest experience, and research. Research always for a facility our size is kind of not really on the back burner, but it really doesn't get the attention really we would like to put to it because of just resources.
Sure.
So but it's important because this is how we learn about our animals. It's how we learn about things that we can make our animals' lives better. So when our animal care staff were looking at things that perplexed them a little bit on the animal's behavior, they didn't have the time to sit back and study it. So when we had a Fairfield University approached us to say, hey, can we have a program? It's ethology, they call it. It's a study of animal behavior. Really, it starts out as people, students sitting in front of a habitat, looking at the animal and looking at what their behaviors are. Got up, yawned, moved, slept, ate, drank water, moved again, and that they put an ethogram, it's called an ethogram, together on what the animal's movements are throughout the day. Well, that's all well and good, and that gets the basis of what the research and animal behavior starts out as. But we've taken that to a much higher level with Dr. Byun and my staff, Jim Knox and Rob Thomas. They've done a tremendous job where they've asked our staff, what problems do you have with the animals? What do you see that we can maybe learn a little bit more to correct some behavior or make their lives better? And so the students spend about 400 to 450 hours each semester
wow.
on behavior observation. It's a huge amount of project, a huge project. And we've actually moved it up to its own status, which is now called RISE program. It's the RISE program here. This is RIZE, which is Research, Internships, and Zoo Education. And this, again, the staff gets together. What kind of things are we looking at? What kind of problems are we seeing? One of the problems was pickles. Pickles was
like, not pickles
was
the food.
Porcupine.
You're talking about pickles.
No, pickles are porcupines.
Ah, yes. Pickles okay,
porcupine.
Pickles.
Pickles a porcupine. Pickles a porcupine was in our farm yard, and before she was moved out, people didn't see her very much, and she didn't come out, and she wasn't very, you know, she was very shy, and we weren't sure how much food she was consuming because it was an outside area. Maybe squirrels were getting in there, other birds were getting in, getting the food. So we didn't really know how that was work, how she was working. So the students actually were able to put a program together to where they had put these, what they call little garbage bins, really, and they were able to have Pickles trained to go over and open up the garbage bin, you know, step on it, the lid would open up, Pickles would get the food out and get her food, which no other animal was going to do that. So they were able to work with that to get that kind of training going in, so she was able to get her food, and we were able to observe it and see if it was actually working. Mm-hmm. Another problem was our Geldy's monkeys inside the rainforest building were stealing our sloth's food. They were just little thieves. They would just take the food out. And again, our staff really wants to know how much food is being consumed, because that is part of the health and welfare of the animal.
Sure.
So the students watched them. We have trail cams at the zoo now. They can watch them at home. They get the Wi-Fi. They can also get the tapes and look back. And so they can watch throughout 24 hours. So not just on site. They can actually see it from home. They noticed how the animals were behaving. And they were able to formulate a pulley and bucket system to where the bucket could be raised up from the floor for the sloth's food. The sloth could get the food, but the Geldy's monkeys really couldn't navigate it. And they were able to actually watch that and be able to show that it actually worked.
That
and
is so cool.
Probably the most exciting one that we had was with our anteaters. Anteaters are very acoustical. They hear sound that are well below our range.
Mm-hmm.
Humans' range, and they get upset by certain things, and especially when we're having babies born here, the staff wanted to know what was upsetting the anteater. So this is a multi-year program where the anteater were being studied by these students from Fairfield University, and they determined by just again observation and by some experiments, they determined that things like chainsaws and weed whackers had that low acoustical sound signature that would upset the anteater. And so now we know that if anybody's going to be over there with a chainsaw or going to be working over there with a weed whacker, that they will put white noise on inside the anteater habitat so the anteaters don't get upset. And it turns out that signature, that little acoustical signature, mimics a baby anteater's distress call.
Wow.
So if you looked at when they actually mapped this, they mapped this on the computer, and you could see that when you matched them up, the chainsaw signature matched the baby anteater's distress call. So, again, now we know,
cool.
And that makes the animal's life better. I think the coolest thing, because I think it's the coolest thing, they're looking at how to find out if they can do facial recognition on our trout in the classroom trout, because we bring trout in every year with work with students to raise the trout and get them released back into the Pequannock River so they can go back and do their natural thing and hopefully repopulate the Pequannock River, which actually is working, which is another whole story. But they were looking to see if they could do facial recognition on the trout so they could determine which trout are being bullies in the tank. Can you imagine
that?
Are
you kidding? That's amazing. That is awesome. You send them to detention.
I thought that was the coolest program they were working on. They haven't got it down yet, but they're working on it.
Wow. That's awesome. Now, Greg, I know we've run out of time, but really quick, if you're part of this program, like, do college students, do they get credit for this?
They do get credit for this.
Wow.
This is part of the vertebrate zoology at Fairfield University. We
so
do
cool.
have a lot of internship programs here at the zoo. Check on our website. We're a little bit slow on internships this year because of the pandemic, but we're going to be ramping those back up hopefully after the summer. So again, look at if you're looking to kind of do an internship here, see if working with animals and working in conservation and environmental studies is something you like, take a look at our website and our internship program.
Greg Dancho, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much, and some really cool stories. That is amazing.
Thank you, Melissa. Have a great day.
Hey, thanks. You too.